I want to talk about what will happen if you don't. What will happen if you don't? That's a question you might want to ask yourself on a regular basis. What will happen if you don't? And you could fill in the rest of that sentence with whatever activity you're pondering. What will happen if you don't fill in the blank? And you are the one that needs to fill in the blank. I know there are certain bullet points that came to mind when I was thinking about this topic. One of which is that life continued on its current trajectory can be predicted with a lot of certainty. I mean, if you look at the direction that your life is going and you say, well, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing, and we pretty much know if we continue doing what we're doing, we're going to continue having what we're currently getting. And if we continue on that same trajectory and it's not ideal, then we're going to need to invoke more distractions in order for us not to notice on a conscious level that we're going in a direction contrary to our soul's purpose. We're going to notice that people with differing relationships with truth or pain or God, etc., are going to become more and more obvious to us. And as we don't deal with what needs to happen, turmoil is going to increase due to that unsatisfied and maybe even unrecognized purpose that is seeking expression within us. The refusal for one to bond with one's own will and one's own purpose is going to lead to more rejection. That rejection takes on the form noticeably when we start rejecting other people, but its origins are internal. I've said over the years, and I'm firmly convinced that this is true, that all rejection is self-rejection. All disapproval is self-disapproval. If we want to give somebody rejection, where's it going to come from? It's going to come from us. Where did we get it? We practice rejecting ourselves. It seems to me that the weight of these unrecognized, unfinished business activities are going to occupy more and more, and too much actually, of our mind share and our heart share until we handle it. And you know this from a procrastination standpoint. Let's say you have an activity that needs to be handled, mowing the lawn, taking out the trash, washing the dishes, doing laundry, making a few phone calls, all of that stuff. We don't do them, but we think about them and think about them and think about them and think about them. It's as if we're revving the engine of our vehicle, vroom, 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 but we don't put the vehicle into drive. That is, we don't actually take the action, we only consider it. That's tough on the body, tough on the vehicle. And the undirectionalized energy is going to actually decrease or diminish our energy, and the energy that does remain will tend to flow into less than desirable channels. Well, I don't have enough energy to do what needs to be done, so I'm going to use what little energy I have and fritter it away by doing something less important, maybe even detrimental to me. Mental and emotional discomfort will increase to the point where it's painful. It's like, this is increasing, and then we crank up the distraction. Fear would have won the battle in life over love. I'm afraid to do it. That's why I'm not doing it. That's what's happening. And the sense of failure is going to dominate despite all of our attempts at denying what's going on. And then we have, over time, spent a lot of investment in building and expanding our facade. So that facade takes on the priority. It becomes dominant as we're trying to pretend we're not really what's inside of that facade. The one that is frustrated with ourselves, unhappy with ourselves, rejecting of ourselves. Importantly, we would have lost the opportunity to be a role model for other people. We are role models. So, one's life, instead of being a model of what to do, becomes a cautionary tale of what not to do. And shame follows that downward slide from fear to grief to apathy. Love of life is lost to despair and hopelessness. And then death as an escape is welcomed. I've talked about the law of cause and effect. I've talked about the carrot and the stick. I've talked about the power of the visual and the goals that we set and the conditions that we want. I've talked about the human desire for certainty and the opposing desire for uncertainty, because it can make life more exciting and more interesting. Since we learn through experiences, and I could say, I want you to think of that as trial and error, a lot of what we focus on are the consequences of our thoughts and feelings and words and actions. We could say that the more aware we are, the more the consequences of our actions will be effective in producing desirable results. The opposite is true as well. The less aware we are, the more we're likely to produce consequences which will result in undesirable effects and results. With that thought in mind, we should be able to develop and determine the consequences and conditions of our lives if we continue our current behaviors and, by extension, our current trajectory. If we're sick, to continue being sick can only end one way: lingering illness resulting in death. If we are poor, to continue being poor can only end one way: oppressive poverty that prevents full expression and enjoyment of life. If we're angry, to continue being angry can only end one way: a state of rejection that spreads to the cells and the tissues of the body, resulting in the breakdown of the body into illness and later death. I've also talked extensively about splits, the idea that our energy exchange experiences could have disrupted or shattered our identity, our self-view. One aspect of splits is a part of us is now focused intensely on avoiding a recurrence of pain, while a deeper part of us, the real essence of us, is seeking expression in order to fulfill our life's purpose. So there we stand, at the fork in the road, facing the choices of setting out to achieve that deeper purpose, even if it isn't completely clear to us, or the other branch of the road, not taking a chance on change, to keep doing what we have been doing, reducing uncertainty. Better the devil I know than the devil I don't know is a belief spoken and followed, consciously or subconsciously, by many people. I recently watched several movies starring Saoirse Ronan. She starred in Lady Bird, Brooklyn, Violet and Daisy, and Host. I watched the movie Host most recently. Host was the story of an alien species that came to Earth to occupy humans to prevent us from our expression of violence and hate and other negative characteristics. The star was occupied by the alien consciousness, but because of her human consciousness was so strongly committed to reuniting with her younger brother, which she promised to do, and her boyfriend, her consciousness remained inside of her, her human consciousness. This imagery fits in with my view of splits and the competing energy patterns that will pull and push us in one direction or another. At that fork in the road, these impulses battle to inform, direct, and even to control our behaviors. To maintain the status quo, we would have let the habitual patterns continue. If we're bearing valuable fruit in our lives, continuing to do that is a mighty good idea. The feelings of creating and contributing give great joy. As in the movie Host, two key women show the battle of the dominated and repressed human consciousness to break free and come out. In this scenario, the humanness is viewed as good by the human consciousness, but it's not viewed as good by the alien consciousness, because they've looked at what human beings have done to planet Earth and to one another. The question, are we similarly possessed? I think so. It's understood that within our bodies are more microorganisms than we have our own cells. That means we have more foreigners in us than we have us within us. It's also understood that some of these microorganisms influence our eating patterns because they prefer when we eat sugar. Many cravings that we think we have are really the cravings that the microorganisms in our gut are having. Wouldn't it be sad or even terrible to exist in this lifetime without really trying to expand one's own expression in the world? To be hesitant, to risk expression, which is another version of exposure, subverts our life's purpose. We need to come out. We need to blossom. We need to express, just like a fruit tree would do, just like a flower would do, just like any living being would do. Let's assume that we each have an internal impulse to live. The will to live seems pretty obvious, doesn't it? To live is to have a life. To have a life is to be, to do, and to have. What should you be? What should you do? What should you have? You'll have to answer those questions for yourself. What will happen if you don't? This question needs to be answered, and the answer needs to be fully understood. The ego, if it's in complete control, will create a person who is destructive to others, and ultimately, to the self. The managed ego, on the other hand, will be constructive and contributive to the well-being of oneself and to others. It will be capable of protecting itself and others. It will be focused on being the best self it can be without the harm the unmanaged ego can do. It will want to be the best for the self. It will want to have the best for the self, but not exclusively, because it will know the joy of helping another person experience joy. And finally, while it will want to have friends and family and status and prosperity and influence and power, it knows that change is inevitable. Energy moves, people come and go, and life is fluid. What feelings will arise as we approach activities leading to a fuller life filled with health, happiness, success, greater expression? But we don't. At first, we will hardly notice the gentle nudge from deep inside. It could just be a momentary thought, or maybe a nudge, or an idea that is easily ignored. But over time, we will have to distract ourselves in order not to hear this inner voice, this inner drive, this inner impulse. The conflict between not doing and the urge to do will intensify. Excuse-making, alibis, all sorts of justification will happen. Distracting behaviors will increase in frequency and intensity. Then the body will start to show signs of distress. Imagine the impact on a vehicle if you insisted upon driving it and then simultaneously pressing down firmly on the brakes. The engine and the entire vehicle would display signs of this conflict. At any point, a shift would be possible. In the language used with alcoholism, when a person, quotes, hits bottom, end quotes, they may wake up to the need for change. Even though this bottom point is a mental, emotional creation of the individual, many people wait for some external occurrence to tell them to stop, to tell them it's time to change. They don't take responsibility that it comes from their own internal awareness waking up and trying to get their attention. Instead, they think, I need a sign, I need a sign. The sign comes from within. In letter 9 of Christ Returns reveals startling truth. Christ says, "The only true energy, true dynamic healing life force, comes from your consistent contact with divine consciousness. Attunement with divine consciousness and total self-mastery should be your reason for living and your only goal. One thing will happen if you don't, you fill in the blank, don't what, you fill in that blank, is that you are being controlled and you are not progressing toward self-mastery." Christ goes on to say, "When you have achieved it," and that means attunement with divine consciousness and total self-control, "all you have ever wanted for yourself will be yours in a new, transcendent, and eternal way." Self-mastery needs to be explored. When we decide we won't, we can't, we shouldn't, etc., we are giving away our power to other people and circumstances. We are magnifying obstacles and minimizing the power of the self connected to divine consciousness. The game in quotes, needs to change. Currently, for most of us, the game is to avoid discomfort, avoid inconvenience, avoid fear, rail against anything that is not instant gratification. We want more comfort, more convenience, more certainty, more gratification, preferably instant gratification. The change I now imagine is when we form a vision of a condition we want to create, and we look at ourselves, we look at our will, our purpose, and we channel our energy and the energy of divine consciousness to manifest that condition. We would be more focused on holding ourselves responsible for maintaining a trusting, excited, elevated sense of awareness that would make the game both fun and meaningful. Later on, we can think of things that are external. We can think about market share, getting customers or followers or subscribers or etc. People who are aligned with our forms of expression will automatically be drawn to us if we make our expressions available. Being overly concerned with what the neighbors will think is evidence of the fear of our status being diminished through the gossip. In these cases, we give the power to the neighbors and fear their judgments and criticism. It's easy to see these examples of the ego's driving needs. Driving need number 4 is when we want to hold on to our status, our power, our image in the minds of other people, our influence, our property, our friends, our families. And driving need number 1, where we are impelled to defend ourselves from criticism, emotional, physical attack. To sabotage our own potential for success and our potential for happiness because of our catastrophizing imaginings about the thinking of our neighbors is very sad. We have a full-time job trying to understand why we think the way we think and why we do the things we do. and now we're going to empower whatever the neighbors are thinking and feeling, and we presume to know how that's going to go? Seems mighty silly to me. Do any of us want to answer this question? What will happen if you don't? With, I gave up my life because the boogeyman I imagined into existence was too scary for me to face. People won't answer that way so directly. Instead, they will move downward toward death, which others will decide and declare, oh, that's a tragedy. To which I would say, it's suicide. When people take actions, including inactions, that result in unhappiness, illness, and then death, that's suicide. Maybe this brings me to the answer to the question, what will happen if you don't? You will sap the strength from your will and your purpose, making your body unable to continue staying alive. Your soul will leave and set in motion preparation for your next lifetime, in which the unfinished business in this lifetime, on your path to elevating your consciousness, will start all over again. You don't graduate, you repeat. For those of us who understand that failing a grade in school means repeating that same grade until it is passed successfully, why would you not put into now the extra effort of will, purpose, attunement to divine consciousness, and self-mastery? Now, this very moment is the time to woman up or man up, and you have tremendous divine support. Now is the time to take action. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version from the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Now, I mentioned, or I repeated a quote from Letter 9, that attunement to divine consciousness and total self-mastery. This is what divine consciousness is offering. Listen to it in this prayer. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. Who wouldn't want more of that? We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.